Hey everyone, James LaBrie from Dream Theater, and you're listening to or watching the podcast Talking Into Infinity with JT and Brian.
You're dialed into Talking Into Infinity, a Dream Theater podcast. Be a part of the show live every other Thursday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on YouTube, Facebook, TalkingIntoInfinity.com, or the CMSNetwork.com.
What's up, guys? Happy 2024, and welcome to another episode of Talking Into Infinity, a Dream Theater-centric podcast. I am your host, John. We are live on Facebook, YouTube, TalkingIntoInfinity.com, the CMSNetwork.com, and the CMS Network Rumble page. We are at those locations every other Thursday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you are watching on YouTube, don't forget to click that like button, click that subscribe button, and hit the notification bell so that you are notified every time we go live. Without further ado, let me bring on my very good friend, potential future co-worker, depending on how his interview goes at my company. But he is the man, the myth, the legend, Brian Hendrickson. What's up, man?
Dude, 2024, does that look really weird when you write that out like that? Like, it's like the Jetsons, you know, the cars are going to be flying and stuff. It looks kind of futuristic to me when I see it, like, just written out like that.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely weird. I mean, hell, if for no other reason, it's a leap year. So,
yeah,
you know, I kind of feel like we just got through one of those. But, you know, yeah, here we are, another leap year, another year. Here's something crazy that I noticed today. So I'm, you know, we're trying to come up with a list of topics for the year. We always try and do the stuff ahead of time if we can. And I have a sheet that I keep all of our show topics on, like suggestions, like we could do this, we could do this. And the date of the sheet is January 19th of 2021.
Wow.
I'm like, holy crap. And I mean, of the numbered episodes, this is number 75, and I know I think I missed a number in there somewhere. So we've actually probably done closer to 80 episodes, but man, it is crazy to think how long this has gone on. Like, you know,
so we're starting year four then?
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
I know. So it's been a great ride, man. And I mean, pulling back the curtain, you and I have always talked about, okay, you know, the reason it's Dream Theater centric now is because, well, how long are we going to be able to talk strictly Dream Theater? Without you know, like nitty grittying, like let's break down the chord structures of the middle section of Breaking All Illusions, you know.
Right. But
you know, 2024 is going to give us plenty of stuff to talk about, it looks like. So, you know, right off the rip, I thought we would just kind of have a open forum discussion and kind of give our expectations for the band in 2024, get the fans in here and you know, see what they have to say.
So I have a question.
Okay.
Okay, so you get I don't want to say door number one, door number two. A or B, what do you think will produce a better album? They lock themselves in the studio for, let's say, 3 weeks, write an entire album.
Okay.
Or they take time on their own for 3 months, compiling ideas, trading back and forth, let's say 2 months of that, 3 months of that, then get together, flush everything out for 3 months, and come up with like a double concept album or something. Which do you think would sound better or be more organic? Or, well, we know it's more organic, but what do you think would be better?
I think for my preference, I mean, having more of a new record is always great. So the double concept record is really cool. I mean, that would be one hell of a Dream Theater thing to do. But I think for me, the first option would be better, at least to my ears, because, you know, there's this fresh energy, which, you know, we've talked about before. There's going to be a certain, you know, aggression and attitude to this record just because they're so fired up to work together again. And mute my mic because I burped there. You know, I think that that's going to be the best route to go, just to feed off of that natural energy and go that way. You know, and we've talked before about the fact that, you know, at the very least, of the Mangini records, Distance Over Time is the best record that they did with him. And it's to me, it's one of the best records in the catalog. And that's what they did. They just hold themselves away together, wrote from scratch, living together, and they produced a fantastic record that way. So for me, it'd be the first option. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm wondering, is there a sense of urgency? Like, look, let's, as soon as we get something good, let's not screw around with it too much and lose the essence of it, you know? Or is it, hey, let's Dream Theater, Portnoy, arrange the hell out of it? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There's that line of, like, you know, what do they do? Because it's been so long since they worked with him in this capacity.
Yeah, I like... Joe Gebhardt has a good idea. Good to see you, man, by the way. He says they could end up with both for A or B. So, yeah, I mean, they could do the writing wise. They could do the first choice and then end up with B, like a double concept record. So you could get the best of both worlds there.
Yeah, let's do two albums. The first, boom, we didn't even really think too much about it. It was whatever the first thing that came to our mind, minor tweaking. Here's 12 songs. We did this in 2 weeks, right? And then the second one, we took 6 months. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I don't even know how you would... I don't know if any band's ever done something like that. I think that would be kind of interesting.
Yeah. So, now, are you saying, like, kind of like pull a Metallica Load Reload, where they wrote a bunch of songs and put the first half out on one record, then did the tour, then put the second half out, like, polished them up and put the second half out on another record?
Well, no, I'm still saying it's two albums put out together, but the first one is boom. This is just stuff that organically came together really quickly, you know, and it kind of sounds more like, let's say, Distance Over Time. And then the second one is more way fleshed out and way out there, you know, and they took like 3 months to do that one or 6 months or whatever.
Yeah.
They put the two albums together in a package, but the two records don't sound anything. I mean, maybe they might sound a little bit similar, but the way that they were composed and recorded is totally different.
That's interesting. I mean, I think with these guys, you can't really discount anything. I mean, I'm expecting like a straightforward, just a new record, but it is Dream Theater and they have thrown some curveballs. It's kind of what they do. So they could come out with something just enormous and crazy, you know, especially if it's going to be like, let's say that rumor that everyone's talking about where it's going to be one album tour, live album tour out. You know, if they're only going to do one more studio record, I mean, maybe they will do something like off the wall, like what you're suggesting. I mean, that very well could be, man. I mean, real quick, get to some comments here since we got a bunch of new people here. Chuck74, good to see you, man. He says, finally catching a live stream. I just saw Portnoy at Bubba Bash last Saturday. That's awesome. Chastity Crawley, always good to see you. She says, Happy New Year, everyone. Excited for the first stream of the new year. Obviously, we got Joe Gebhardt in here. Luke has spoken. Hello there. I'm finally catching you guys live for once. Happy New Year. That's awesome, Luke. Thanks for tuning in, man. Ali's Studio. Always good to see you. He says, Happy New Year, 2024. Hope you're ready for new Dream Theater. Yes, we are. Yes, we are. We definitely, of course, as always, have Kale McLeish in here.
He says, no. Thank you, Kale. Yeah. That's insightful.
It says, no, we don't want that.
I have a question. What? Full disclosure, I have no idea. What is Bubba Bash?
Yeah, that was like an all-star type of thing, if I remember right.
Just a big jam or something, or
I don't know. Yeah, so let us know in the comments there, Chuck. Let us know what Bubba Bash was. Maybe it's I hate to say it, but is it Bubba the Love Sponge? Bubba Bash 2024. Let's see here. So, all right. So, according to the internet, which is always reliable, all you need is love. Oh no, wait, no, that's a different show. Never mind. Damn it. It was at the Keswick Theater, I can tell you that.
Hmm.
Bubba Bash featuring Why Not.
Oh, okay. I did see something involving that.
Mike Portnoy, Johnny Dinklage, Jason Bittner, Frank Bello, John Wesley, Joe Bergamini, Seven Antonopoulos. I played shows with that guy.
Oh, really?
His actual name is Chris. Yeah, so he's an amazing drummer. And he, Thank you, Kale. He says it's a Neil Peart tribute gig. Okay.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
But yeah, he back in 99 or so, 99 or 2000, he was actually the drummer for Vanilla Ice when Ice put out like that, like rap rock stuff, like the nu metal record, which actually is really not bad. But I opened for him when he came to Cleveland on that tour date. And his drummer was Chris Antonopoulos, and the guy is insane. Like he's just unbelievable. If you ever get a chance to see that guy play drums, he's out of this world, man. So, yeah, that's how I met Antonopoulos. That's cool, man. So Joe Gebhardt says, I just listened to your episode today again of your deep dive of Dream Theater 12, and you said it best in that episode where Illumination Theory felt glued together. I feel that way a lot about the Mangini era. Yeah, I think, you know, JG3, Vanilla Ice deep dive. Yes, we will deep dive the Bipolar record. CD1 is the rap rock and CD2 is the hip hop. So there we go.
I loved your ringing endorsement. It's actually not that bad.
Well, but I mean, dude, okay. If someone says to you, Vanilla Ice put out a new metal record, aren't you going to think it's like hot garbage? No,
I've heard it. I know what you're talking about. I guess that's a good way of phrasing it. It's not that horrible. Not that great either, but it's not that horrible.
See, Doug McCauley's got my back. He says that Ice record was dope. Then he disappeared again. Yeah. Actually, my guitar player produced one of his records, and my landlord at the time actually put the record out. I think it was Radium Records was the label. But yeah, my buddy.
Trying to figure out who's higher on the food chain here than your guitar player or your landlord.
Well, the landlord had the money. Oh, so okay. There you go. But yeah, in terms of like the Mangini era being like glued together and stuff like that, I don't know that I feel that way. I don't know if I could agree with that. Do you? I mean, I feel like it was a normal kind of run. I mean, it was, you know, the Astonishing was definitely out there. But I mean, they put out four other standard studio records with them. So
I guess that's because of, you know, we talk about the before about dramatic turn of events and the drums being pre-mapped already by, what's his face? Petrucci. I can't think of the damn guitar player's name. And the fact that was all done, and then Mangini just kind of came in and played those exact parts, I guess. Maybe that's why people say that about those two albums in general.
Yeah. I do think it kind of sucks. I mean, the thing I will say is that, you know, those, I like The Astonishing, so I'm going to count this as a three-album run. But, you know, for me, The Astonishing, Into Distance Over Time, Into View from the Top of the World, I thought they were really getting, you know, a writing style down together. It was still very much Dream Theater and everything, and obviously, you know, Mangini's a little bit more technical, I would say, than Portnoy. But, you know, I thought they were in a really good run, and so it kind of sucked it ended when it did.
Doug McCauley, did you just blank on Petrucci? I did. It's been a long day. I'm sick. I'm getting over a cold. I had a very stressful job interview earlier.
Yeah, I'm sure it was stressful.
It was.
Nice.
I had to pretend that I knew you and that you weren't that horrible of a human being.
I told them to ask you for the first question just to really mess with you. Like, so John says you really, really suck. Can you talk a little bit about that? Yeah. And I couldn't get him to do it.
Yeah, that's funny.
But yeah, I don't think it's glued together so much. And I mean, if you do feel that way, I really wonder what this is going to feel like with Portnoy again. Is it going to be like that old comfortable pair of jeans, or is it going to feel a little weird? You know, it's going to be interesting. Like it'll be crazy to see how everything, you know, gets leaked out, like how the fans actually react, you know, stuff like that. I mean, I'm super excited for it. I'm hoping that they get all this stuff going earlier rather than later, because I don't want them to tour during busy season at work, because I really can't take time off to go see a show, and I really want to go see the first show back. But if it's like September and later, I might be kind of SOL. Unless it's like a weekend show and I can, like, you know, the first date's on like a Friday or a Saturday or something. But yeah, it's
You know, I just noticed something. My name is spelled wrong here. Sometimes it gets confusing because I guess I'm supposed to put the I before the A. Let me fix that real quick. I'll be right back.
Good Lord. What the hell is he doing? Do we need the banner? Like my John's taking a piss banner? Maybe Brian's taking a piss? Who knew? Doug McCauley says, based off his Drumeo stuff, it's going to be in the pocket, man. Yeah, one of the things that's interesting to me about the Drumeo thing is that, first of all, it's cool to see, you know, it's cool to see him doing this stuff again. But isn't it weird to see him on like a quote unquote normal drum kit playing this stuff? Like, is he going to have that monster kit like the Siamese Monster again, or is he going to, you know, have, you know, the Winery Dogs, Winery Dogs kit, or, you know, even Sons of Apollo was more normal. Like, it'll be interesting to see what he pulls out. So, all right, you're back. Were you taking a piss?
No, I got that fixed. Sometimes it's hard because when you have that many letters in your name, it gets confusing. But it is IA, I think.
Such an ass. It said brain for like the last year.
I know. I didn't even realize it.
Are you serious? You didn't do that on purpose?
I get confused sometimes. My name's not easy to spell, man. It's like yours.
Dumb. Oh, shut up.
You forget the H all the time in yours. It's not even in there this time.
Oh, that's amazing. All right, good. So the chat is correcting me. Thank you very much for that. Doug McCauley said it's going to be bigger.
That's what she said.
Well played. JG3 said he said in the Drumeo he's going to have a monster kit. And Chastity and Kale are doubling down on that as well. Okay. Yeah, that part I did not hear. I have to be honest. I haven't watched all of the Drumeo stuff. For me, it's like it's cool. But to me, it's like, okay, it's Mike Portnoy playing Dream Theater stuff. Awesome. Okay. I should probably watch more of that. I'm trying to pay more attention to like interviews and things like that so I can glean some, try and get some more concrete dates, because he's done a few where he has said, you know, he's got some touring commitments early in the year. I don't know if it's full tour or something like that, but he's definitely got some show commitments in the beginning of the year. And then he said they're going to convene early in the year to start writing and whatnot. So I'm wondering how quickly they want to get something going. Luke has spoken. He says, watch Portnoy play Nickelback on Drumeo. I read about him. He was supposed to do a show with Nickelback, so I know that. And then he had said that, like, you know, he did it with a whole bunch of double bass and stuff like that, I guess, in the Drumeo, like, and because he had never heard it before. So, you know, that certainly will be interesting. God, what Mike Portnoy playing Nickelback. That's
when
crazy.
I saw that, I thought it was something from The Onion. I didn't even click on it. I'm like, this can't be real.
Babylon B.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was interesting. Could you imagine going to a Nickelback show and you get Mike Portnoy?
That'd be awesome, man.
That would be funny. That would be funny. It's definitely going to be interesting to see, you know, what the timeline is going to be. I mean, do you think they're going to try and get something out sooner, or, you know, to kind of capitalize on the momentum? Or are they going to sit on it? Like, how do you think they're going to do?
Well, I think they should be getting to writing and recording like ASAP. Like, I'm going to predict they're done with all that probably by end of March at the latest. Because why mess around and wait? What are you waiting for?
Well, I mean, he does have show commitments, so maybe it kind of like.
What does he still have? I thought the Winery Dogs was all done.
Winery Dogs is done, but it's a couple of like one offs. It's some
really?
Of the stuff everybody's like more one off things.
Okay.
I think they're going to write in spring. I'm wondering, like, I don't know how long it really takes to get a record. It's usually like 3-4 months or something, but I'm hoping that they get the record out in like summer, and it's like a summer release, summer tour. So, you know.
Yeah, I was thinking September. I mean, I think October was when the last one came out. I think we got the single by the end of August or something last
year.
Yeah.
Circle J, Jason Clues, what's up, man? He says, nobody can imagine going to a Nickel show in the first place, a Nickelback show in the first place. So, no. Nice. Oh, my God. Joe Gebhardt says, I really hope they make more than one studio album. That creative juice for new music with Mike Portnoy has to last longer than that. Kale says he has said that this is the third act, So I think he's already thinking it's more than just the album tour, live album tour out that we're all talking about. And then JG3, he confirms, he says, yeah, he said in the Drumeo that he still has some live shows until March. So, yeah, I'm unfortunately for me, I'm thinking it's going to be like friggin' fall, which really blows.
Yeah, I don't see an album before. I don't see an album before October.
I'm going to have to take time off of work in the busiest time of the year. And that's, damn it. Oh, well. Ali Studio says, what song lacks? Are you hoping to be on Dream Theater 16 when you post the details about the new DT6? Clarify what you mean by song lacks, Ali. Let me know what you mean there.
Yeah, I'm confused.
JG3, one thing I hope they keep doing is letting James do his vocals. The way they did vocals on Systematic Chaos and Black Clouds with Petrucci Portnoy demoing the vocals resulted in less than great melodies. Yeah, that's going to be interesting because I think one of the things that really stood out about the last two records, Jay, at least for me, was the choruses were really big, especially on, for me anyway, View from the Top of the World, because they have more layered vocals, you know, with James not hitting those high notes anymore. You know, they really replaced that with more harmonies in there, which I thought really kind of added to the sound. I really liked it. So, you know,
yeah, I don't know if I agree with that, man. There's some great freaking melodies on Black Clouds.
No, there is, but I would take the two recent records over those in terms of, like, you know, chorus melodies personally. Yeah, I mean, and Black Clouds is great. You're not wrong. I mean, yeah. we've talked about Nightmare to Remember, and that middle part is one of the most beautiful things they've ever done.
I love the melodies in Count of Tuscany, obviously, but
yeah, the one thing that's interesting, and it's something that I kind of got in a discussion with on one of the Dream Theater Facebook pages, and I'm an asshole for getting in there commenting. And
I was going to say, why bother?
Oh, God. I swear, man, like, I don't know why I comment on those things. Even reading the comments is just, it just pisses me off. Like, God damn. They were talking about the band finally tuning down to accommodate James so they could kind of expand the number of songs they have to choose from for the live show. And I'll be interested to see if they do that. And I'm also wondering if they can, because with a lot of the stuff using the 7-string, I would think that would sound really muddy. What, I mean, what do you think? Do you think they would be able to do that?
I don't know that just tuning down a half or a whole step. I mean, it helps, but I don't think it helps as much as people think when you're talking about some of the stuff that he has to sing, you know, yeah, and the power and how high it is behind it. So I don't know. Yeah. I mean, with the 7-string, yeah, that could get kind of muddy, I would think.
It's already in B. I mean, yeah, at that point, if you drop it a step, you're tuning to corn. And then it's, you know, I mean, you might as well be playing all the 7-string stuff on the 8-string. And right, then that just doesn't sound right. You know? All right, Kale. He says they've done it already. Illumination Theory is a tuned down 7-string. All right, Kale, yeah, you play guitar. Any of you guys that play guitar, like, explain this technologically for us or techie wise, because I've always thought that when you drop something that low, it just turns to mud. You just lose the harmonic capabilities of the guitar when it's that low. I mean, especially for something that, you know, something like Dream Theater, where you need that as part of the melody. It's not like Korn where, you know, it's supposed to be, you know, it's not really meant to be a discernible, overly discernible riff anyway, you know? So right. So, if you know how that works, I play guitar. I've had setups done, and I have a vague understanding of it. But I just feel like it would sound, with a 6-string, you could definitely do it. Like, if, you know, if they're in standard and they drop it down to D, like, drop it a step, okay. And to your point, yeah, some of his stuff is so high that it's not going to be a huge difference. But I mean, you sing in your band a little bit, and you know, obviously I do. It's, I mean, it does open up, you know, the choices that, that they would have, I would think.
We're a whole step down, and it definitely makes, at my old ass age, singing a lot easier. I will say that, but it's a little weird. It's also a little strange too. Like it, you really kind of got used to it.
Yeah. It's, I'm used to a half step, because the bands that I've sang in for the last 15, 16, 17 years, whatever it is, like, that's what, you know, they tune to.
Right.
And a lot of it is for the lead vocal, sure. But I think a lot of that, actually, at least in the bands you and I are in, is almost more for the harmony vocals. Because sometimes if you do it in standard, even if the singer can do it, the backing vocals are so high, it's damn near impossible to hit for a lot of people. So,
well, we also like, and I don't sing any of them, but we do those crew tunes, which they are tuned a whole step down. So if you only tune a half step down and you're doing that stuff, you're actually singing it a half step higher.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is like damn near impossible. And again, I don't even attempt to do those. We have our bass player, because he's got that kind of voice that fits that. But
sure,
you know how that goes.
Yeah. Yeah, Kale, so I know the thickness of the string. He says, sorry, that's supposed to be A from B is basically drop D. It's the thickness of the string that gets dropped makes it more controllable. Yeah, see, Kale, it's like that part I'm familiar with, because when I was playing in my original band APG that we talked about on the show a few times, on my bass, I had a 5-string and we were tuned to D all the way across, and my 4th string was dropped to C. And then I wanted 2 extra notes on the bottom, so it was like an A sharp or something like that. And I never like wrote it, like, you know, like it was basically, I used it in a melodic sense in some places. And, you know, there was one chorus that I used it to ring out a low note to kind of add some, you know, tension to it. But my low string was a 175. And that was like, I mean, that thing was like playing like a telephone wire. Huh. it was pretty hilarious. But, okay, so Chastity says, it's an odd feeling to drop down if you've learned a song a certain way. I'm the only soprano, but having to drop stuff down, I have to drop stuff down. We have multiple altos. Feels weird. Nice for harmony, odd for lead. Yeah, I think when you're jumping around, and I think someone said in one of those message boards that Jordan said that when they had to, you know, change the tuning, that it kind of messed with him a little bit. So, JG3 has a very good point. He says, I think a perfect example of tuning the songs to the vocalist is Celebration Day Led Zeppelin. They down-tuned the stuff they needed to and kept the stuff in the original key they could, and it was great. I think that is a perfect example, Jay. I kind of think of that all the time when I'm thinking about, you know, bands tuning down and stuff like that, because, you know, Robert Plant did sound great, and, you know, on the songs he had to shriek, they dropped it really low, and it sounded cool. I just wonder what the 7-string thing is going to sound like at that point, you know, like, but I think that's the smartest way to go. I think I agree with this one. Like, you know, if you pick a song and it's high, then alter the tuning for that particular song. And then the stuff that he doesn't need it, you know, keep it in the regular register.
Yeah.
So Ollie's Studio, when do you think Dream Theater will go into the studio, start working on their 16th album? Well, as we were just saying, I think it's going to be spring, and Portnoy has basically confirmed that. So he said he's got these handful of shows, and they said early in the year. And I have seen, I could swear I saw mention of March and spring or something like that in some of his comments. So, you know, so it's definitely going to be that. His involvement is going to be very interesting. Like, how do you think this is going to play out? You know, is he going to be the Portnoy of old, or are we going to see like John Petrucci, like more pronounced, like, you know?
Well, I think for starters, they really have to have a kind of a come to Jesus moment with, you know, with James regarding, okay, what do you feel the most comfortable with? You know, what do you really want to do? You know, we don't want stuff that, you know, is just, look, I don't want to have to go out there and not sound good or worry about it every night. I think they really, really have to just kind of hone in on that as far as the sets go and as far as the recording of the new music, you know?
Yeah.
I think they really have to keep that stuff in mind so he can sound his best on it.
That's going to be the interesting part to me is, you know, because, you know, Mike You know, infamously, the one guy he didn't talk to over the years was James. You know, is that going to kind of rear its head if, you know, James has to, you know, they have to accommodate James live? Is that going to be kind of, you know, a sticking point? Or are they past this? Is, you know, you would assume they're past it, but I mean, you never know. You know, is it going to become an issue again if James has any problems on the road or something like that, or gets a cold? You just don't know. I mean, you just don't know. It's going to be interesting. I just hope they don't have to cut out a shitload of the catalog. You know, I mean, I understand if they do, but I just hope that, you know, we can still get some varied stuff. And
well, I think what they should do too is maybe, you know, do like 6 weeks, you know, 2 weeks off, you know what I mean? Don't try to go out and go for 4 months straight. You know, I don't think that's, I don't even think they necessarily want to do that either, you know?
Yeah.
You know, kind of go out and break it up so you don't kill your voice and everybody else, you know, kill themselves getting worn out on the road, you know, just go out and try to do 3 shows a week for maybe, you know, 2 months or something, go home, shut it down, then start it up again. You know, that's what I think would be a better recipe for success.
That's interesting too. Yeah. I was going to ask you about that, so I'm glad you brought that up. You know, do you think they're going to lighten up on the touring schedule, and not in terms of the number of shows, but the number of shows per week? You know, you think they'll kind of like extend the timeline past, you know, a couple months and just make it like, you know, don't do back to back shows?
Yeah. I don't think they should ever get in a situation where they're doing, definitely not doing more than 4 a week. I think 3 a week would probably be ideal, but it's hard to book that out and stretch that across. You know, everything has to line up, you know, just and this stuff now we've talked before is booked two, three years in advance. So it's like, you got to get this all set up now and then say, well, I only want to play 3 times this week. Well, it depends on where, you know, how the tour falls. So it's going to be, I think it's going to be a bit of a challenge, but I definitely would not be trying to play, I don't think, more than 3 times a week.
I think I completely agree with you from, you know, a physical standpoint with the band. I think the challenge that they might run into there is travel. Because let's say, you know, you're only playing 3 out of 7 days. Well, then you're farting around in a hotel or whatever for, you know, two or 3 days.
That's, you know, the problem. That's worse than playing almost, you know, as far as wearing you out. It's like,
yeah. I mean, it'll up the cost, because instead of just, you know, living off the bus, you're going to have to start getting hotel rooms and stuff like that. So, I would say just cut the back-to-backs, you know, like take that day off to kind of rest and recuperate. And I think that would keep everybody a little more fresh. You know, and honestly, when we were, let's be frank, we're speaking of James, you know, because it'll help him out. You know, like we said, you know, previously he did, you know, he said, I can't, you know, do some of the old stuff the way I did before. So help the guy, you know, prolong the shit. Don't be doing these, like, you know, 2 nights in a row and occasionally a 3 night in a row if they, you know, if they do that anymore, but, you know, give him a hand. And that one day's rest, I mean, Chastity can speak to this, you know, being a vocalist, like that, just that one day can really help. You know, because you could take that day to be silent and, you know, I mean, talking stresses your voice, you know, more than singing in a lot of instances is what people say. So, you know, if you can have that day off in the middle to just kind of relax and not do anything, take care of it, like that would, I'm sure, be like hugely helpful.
Joe Gebhardt, they need to take the time. Okay, I get that. Yeah, there's nice. Never enough time.
I'm not even doing it, man, because you and Kayla are going to get rolling and I'm not.
No, let's not.
this is it's not happening. Also, I can't come up with them that quickly. I'm trying to lead the show and I can't be, oh, I gotta think of,
I had to look
up
some on my phone. I can't think of them that quickly either.
You're going through the discography.
Hell, I couldn't even think of Petrucci's name. You know, the guy that plays guitar for the band we talk about on this podcast.
Oh, that was a good one. And it totally flew past me. I was like, wait, did he miss Petrucci? Oh, I'm looking at the comments.
Right.
And then you got called on it. So, yeah. I think the day off thing would be good. I like the idea of, you know, in the live environment, tuning down songs that need it, but keeping ones that don't need it, keeping those in the original key, or you know, maybe a half step down just to like make it easy and stuff. You don't want to, you know, push it or anything. But yeah, it's I'm kind of surprised we haven't at least gotten some kind of update from the band. I know that like nothing's going on right now, but it's a little surprising to me because I think, you know, because this news was so popular and well received, you know, it's kind of interesting that they're not at least throwing a nugget out here and there saying, hey, here's what's up, to kind of keep that momentum going. I mean, did you think they were going to, we were going to have a little bit more news by now than just, you know, hey, he's back?
They don't want to get buried in the Nick Saban, Bill Belichick,
news cycle.
Yeah.
Nice.
No, I mean, I figured they're like, Portnoy's sort of kind of doing the rounds of the interviews here. I think that'll officially probably wrap up by the end of this month and he'll be done doing those kind of interviews. And, you know, maybe they'll start, you know, you said you heard March. I would hope they would start before then, but I guess like you're saying, if he does have these one-offs, they probably want it to where, look, we can lock ourselves back in. What's the name of their headquarters again?
DTHQ.
Yeah, DTHQ. Once they, you know, lock themselves down in there, if they can block off probably a solid 3 weeks or whatever and get it going, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I know the one thing that Portnoy has been adamant about is that he said that, you know, he was asked about his other projects and are you going to keep doing those? And he said that, you know, once he gets these kind of one-off things out of the way here that he's got right now, that pretty much, you know, he's actually just going to be solely focusing on Dream Theater for a while. You know, he wants to give it 100% of his focus. He's not going to be off doing all these other things like he had before. You know, and he basically said, we'll see which ones survive and which ones don't. So, you know, that'll be kind of interesting. But yeah, I keep thinking March. You know, he's doing stuff in January right now. The one-offs, I think, go into February, if I'm not mistaken. And I just think that, you know, I don't see him coming off the road and immediately running out to DTHQ and like, hey, let's go. I feel like he'll at least take a couple weeks, you know, freshen up and then hit it hard with Dream Theater. And that would put it around March, because we're almost, you know, we're getting close to halfway through January already. So I just think March makes the most sense.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be that. And then, you know, I'm just so excited for that tour. And I'm so pissed off at the timing of it. Yeah. I'm so pissed off about the timing of it.
Dude, like, I'm going to go.
Yeah, I'm going. And I already told my team, like, look, I'm, you know, and I don't take any time off during our busy period. I never have. And so they're all like, dude, if you got to go take time off, go for it. You let us take time off. We can cover for you. So that's cool, man. They're a great bunch of people. And, but,
you know, Joe Gebhardt says Mike Portnoy is the only one talking. That's not true. I just got an update from John Myung. Let me share it with you. That was it. Thank you, John. That was. Hold on. He wants to add something else. Okay, that tells us a lot then, huh?
Nice. Yeah, it's that's another interesting thing. Like, is this how it's going to progress? Is like, is he going to go back to being like the sole mouthpiece? Or are we going to, you know, is John going to continue to do stuff in Jordan? Like, is this going to be a three-headed monster? Or are they going to be like, hey, man, this is what Mike does best. Let's let him do this. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they handle that. Because, I mean, from everything that we've heard, he's kind of, you know, he sounds like he's like, look, they've got a new dynamic and I need to fit into that, instead of, well, I'm coming back and doing what I did before.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot more by committee kind of approach for probably everything, and also how they interact with the media and social media and whatnot.
I kind of hope they blow up this new record. Like when they start writing, like it'd be cool to kind of do. Like I think back, I mean, this is old school, and of course, it's, you know, me talking about Star Wars. Go figure. But you know, when they were doing the prequels, they had this. video series on the internet where they would, I think it was once a week or every other week or something, but on StarWars.com, they would put out like this little 4 or 5 minute video that was like behind the scenes of the making of the movie as it was going. And
yeah,
I think it'd be awesome if they did something like that for the new record to kind of like build the anticipation and get people all pumped up and stuff, like really make this an event. So well,
do a full behind the scenes, like Systematic Chaos, you know, that was a, yeah, that was a killer, like little movie they did, you know, starting from day one going into the studio.
That would be an awesome documentary. I completely agree with you. I mean, hell, I mean, just release it as a separate documentary. If you could it, like do a new record, but also do this like documentary thing. Like, and I don't know if you want to, you know, sell it with the physical copies of the record, you know, in CD or whatever, or, you know, make it a standalone DVD.
But do what you're saying too, though, like do record a whole thing, but then also like, you know, every couple of weeks, you know, give us, I don't know, give us 2 minutes from the studio or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
On social media. That would be killer.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be cool. And I think fans would eat it up. And I, you know, everybody wants to know what the hell's going on. I mean, there's so many questions and everybody wants to know, okay, where are they at? What are they doing? And I think that'd be a cool way to, you know, kind of like pique the interest and not give away too much. But yeah, I mean, a full length documentary, I mean, I would have to think that fans would buy the shit out of that, wouldn't you? I mean, I'd be a first second buyer. I would pre-order that and everything. I mean, yeah, like, yeah, like here's how it came together. Here's how the record, you know, kind of, because they kind of did that with, oh, what was it called? When Anthrax got, I think it was 05, when Anthrax got back together with, or 07 or something, when Anthrax did the reunion with Joey Belladonna and Dan Spitz, they had a documentary at the beginning, and they basically, they had cameras set up for the first time the five of them ever got in a room since Joey left the band in like 1991 or whatever it was. So, and they, it was literally the first time, like they had, they were filming the doorway and one of the guys would walk in like, hey, oh, hey, what's up? And then the next guy, you know, however much later, and they all sat down and like, you know, it was the first time they'd seen each other. And it was really cool because it was, you know, to use a, you know, a word you used earlier, organic.
Yeah.
And there was just that kind of vibe of like, holy shit, I haven't seen you in forever. And I think that would go over huge with the Dream Theater fan base if they did that for this, don't you think?
Yeah, I'd be kind of shocked if they didn't do something like that. Who knows? I mean, they could be cooking up all kinds of stuff because, you know, since Portnoy left the band, like the whole way everything is consumed and recorded and what they can do with audio and video and stuff now and social media. I mean, they could be coming up with some kind of crazy shit. We don't even know, you know, who knows?
That's a really good point, man.
You know?
That is a really good point. I mean, it has been 13 years. And if you think back to like 2010, I mean, Facebook was the thing in the internet, but I mean, it's everything is social media now.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, that's, yeah, I hope they do something like that. I would love to see how this all comes together, you know? And again, I think they have such an opportunity to capitalize on some serious momentum here that I think not doing that would kind of be a missed step.
I mean, something like a, you know, those bands of during the COVID that were doing those live streams, do a freaking,
yeah,
do a live stream of like a rehearsal or something, you know, of a tour rehearsal. I don't know. That would be killer, man. I would love to,
yeah,
see something like that, you know?
That'd be awesome. I know I would do that.
Yeah.
I kind of wish bands still did that, by the way. I mean, it might not be a Dream Theater specific statement or question, but I mean, how many of those did you watch during the pandemic?
Yeah, there was a lot of really cool ones, man.
I know I watched Seven Dust. Phil Anselmo did one where it was all Pantera songs. I watched that one. I watched an Anthrax one. Obviously, you and I got together to watch the Images and Words thing.
Yeah.
That
was a little different, though, because that was already recorded from before, but...
Yeah.
But Killswitch did a cool one too. Like they did a same thing, like, you know, just went into their practice rehearsal place or whatever and performed one of their whole albums. So
yeah. I really wish bands would still kind of do that.
Yeah.
I mean, if I was in a band, I would actually kind of, I would entertain that because I think, you know, I think it's an interesting way to reach the fans and kind of give extra content without a lot of extra, you know, extra effort, extra cost. Just set up a few cameras, set up a pay-per-view and make a few bucks and the fans get some extra things. I love your idea about like a rehearsal or something, or even just like play like three songs or something. You know, get together, do three songs, like maybe blast it out there like, hey, man, Portnoy's back. Like, check this out.
Or like, know, like, I mean, you know, you'll laugh because, you know, the Metallica album, Saint Anger, like, but they put that thing where they just showed all that they're playing the whole album live or whatever. You know what I mean? Like something like that would be cool.
That'd be interesting. I mean, it, that one's always funny to me because that DVD sounded better than the actual album itself. Yeah. And I know for a fact, because like Aiken, when he was doing the metal show, when that record came out, the songs that they did play from the new Metallica record, they played from the DVD instead of from the album because it sounded fatter and better.
And they don't even have to play every song on Saint Anger. Just play most of it.
It's true. Here's Dream Theater performing Saint Anger in its entirety. Albums that influenced you. And we're gonna do some encores from Lulu. Okay, so Doug McCauley says, how about one new song and some covers, circa A Change of Seasons? I think if you want to absolutely shit on your fan base, you do that. I mean, if Portnoy comes back like, hey, here's one new song, I think everyone's just going to riot.
Oh, I think they're just talking about like a teaser for now or something to get us through like a live thing. I don't want any damn covers, man. We don't need... If Portnoy's back in Dream Theater, last thing they need to do is be doing covers.
Yeah. Kale says, I'd actually be extremely up for them to do that. That St. Anger Sessions DVD was sick. There we go. Circle J. Just bring in Bob Rock and a psychologist who probes James and Mike about Mike leaving the band. just do a like a complete ripoff of this of the Some Kind of Monster DVD.
That would be great.
You could have James just screaming in Mike's face and then leaving and slamming the door.
Would Petrucci be Kirk and be like, I don't know what we're doing. He's like, we're like crying. Like, what are we doing to each other? he's like such a wuss, man, in that whole thing. He does not come across very well in that at all.
No. I mean, how that whole thing was just so sad to me. My takeaway from that is that they definitely are, you know, I give them credit for surviving that. You know, they were so popular. I think a lesser band, if they weren't like the biggest band in the world and all that, might have broken up over that because they were so all over the place. And the music that they were writing was just absolutely god awful. I mean,
well, because they were in such a horrible place and it was so forced, you know, it was just such a like, all right, we got to hurry up and show up. We got to all get together and let's write a song. Like, no, it didn't work like that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the best part, I think, was when Lars was showing that new stuff to his dad and his dad just told him to throw it in the trash. I was like, that is amazing.
Sadly, he didn't throw enough of it in the trash.
I know. I argue with Aiken about that all the time. He says that record has some good songs. I'm like, dude, you're fucked in the head. That record is just absolutely terrible. Oh my god, it's so bad. And I don't know how anybody enjoys that stuff. The production is terrible. The songs just sound like they're trying way too hard. You know, Lars and Kirk obviously cannot write lyrics. You know, this is the hands can't see me. This is a door that will not open. This is a forearm that has some hair. Like, oh my god! Like, it's just, whoo boy, that was, you know. Like,
do we ever have an episode where we don't start bagging on Metallica at some point?
Well, we still have to do like the cage match, the Ride the Lightning and Justice for All or Puppets or something. We have to do those. So no, then we won't be shitting on them. But
we definitely do acknowledge the greatness. That's not.
Well, of course.
Let's not be a JG3. His lifestyle determines his death style. That's good to know. Thank you. We didn't ask, but thanks.
Yeah. Here we go. JG3, Saint Anger deep dive. Holy crap. See, you know what that would turn into, Jay? Basically, that would just turn into a rant. It would be strictly probably for humor's sake, because I don't have anything positive to say about that record.
We got to do it now. We got to get Aiken on if we're doing it, though. We can't do it just the two of us. That won't be.
Oh, God. That'll be such an argument. Oh, my God. Yeah, Kale. Birth is pain. Life is pain. Death is pain. It's all the same. Yeah. God. Kale wants to come. Kale, you actually want to defend that piece of shit? Are you shitting me? You want to defend Saint Anger?
Hey, that went like triple plywood over there in Australia.
Triple plywood.
So like 37 copies.
Right. Oh, my God.
It went zinc.
It went zinc. Oh, my God. Kale, I would love to do that, but I don't know how many people would actually tune in to hear us talking about goddamn Saint Anger.
Probably a lot more than you think.
Are you serious? Chuck 74. Come on, man. That snare sound is killer. Oh, it's a killer, all right. I mean, seriously, like, sorry to derail this, but oh, my God.
Oh, we're doing this now.
When that came out, when Saint Anger, the song came out, were you like, what the hell is this?
To be fair, I don't think I had heard any of it, and I just saw the CD in the store like a week or two later, and I think I had been hearing people say, this is probably not that great, but I didn't know what I was in for, and then watched the video and stuff that went with it, and like, oh boy.
Yeah. So, I mean, the video was in San Quentin, which could be cool. But I was just like, what in God's name is this? And frantic, tick, 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 tock. Like, oh my Lord. I mean, that to me seems like it might work on a good album. You'd be like, okay, that's an interesting thing. Like, he's like, the clock is ticking. Okay. But when it's just on an album of nothing but absolute, just sludgy, horrific shit, oh my God, it's.
Whew. All right, Doug McCauley wins the comment. I'll let you read it.
Doug McCauley says, I was yesterday old when I realized Lars hasn't played a ride cymbal since 1992. Right. Oh my Lord.
That's awesome.
Oh, I mean, I can't get into, you know, the whole, you know, look, Kale, correct him. 1998, there's plenty of ride on Load and Reload. You know what he meant, Kale. Quit being a wet blanket. It's bad enough that you're supporting fucking Saint Anger. Jeez Louise. Yeah, there we go. Album cage match. JG3 just suggested it without suggesting it. Fran tick, 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 tock versus I Am the Table. So album cage match. Saint Anger versus Lulu.
Man.
Holy crap. We would just have to have the poop emoji as the show background for that one.
You know what we should do is Saint Anger versus
Risk.
Risk. I couldn't think of the name though. Yeah.
Well,
I think Risk will win that one.
I do too.
Because I can actually like sort of tolerate some of that. I don't love it, but.
Well, it for me, it would actually come down to a single song.
If Prince of Darkness on Risk, or is that on?
That's the exact song.
Okay.
Yes.
The only one that's kind of okay.
Yes. It would be like all of Saint Anger sucks. And even if you don't like anything on Risk, you have to agree that Prince of Darkness at least sounds like a Megadeth tune.
What's the one on there that sounds like a ripoff of Am I Evil? Is that Prince of Darkness or is that a different one?
No, that
you know which one I'm talking about though.
Yeah, but I don't think it's on that record.
Oh, that maybe it's on World Needs a Hero.
Yeah,
it's on one of those.
Yeah,
two.
It's like at the end of World Needs a Hero.
Yeah, you're like, wait a minute, this is Semi Evil. What are they doing here?
All right, oh, I forgot. JG3 thinks Risk is a good record. He says, "Yo, don't bring Risk into this. Look, Jay, that record is terrible. You cannot tell me that that's not the worst Megadeth record.
Crush,
yeah,
Crush.
I mean, dude, even Super Collider is better than that. Come on, now, let's be honest here."
So is that how it goes? It goes like Collider, Super Collider, really super collider? Like, what the fuck is a super collider? That does, have you ever heard that word before in your entire life, ever?
Yes, it's a Large Hadron Collider. It's for smashing particles together to, you know.
Look at you all knowing astrology and stuff.
Astrology. Yeah, no, I mean, but that to me was, even that was like, you know, was he just read it in a book? Like, oh, I'm going to call the album this. Like, what if he was reading about planes? Like the new album is called Super Turbo Jet Engine.
I think it's almost worse than Invincible Shield, but I don't know. Which we've talked about.
All right. Ali, I have to be honest with you because I know you've asked this question like four times. What songs do you hope Dream Theater 16 will have? And what do you think the album title will be, and album artwork and track listing? Ali, I'll be honest. I have no idea.
I was going to say this is
a little too vague. That's a little too vague for us to speculate on. But I would guess no less than 8 songs. I'm thinking closer to 10. Album title, no idea. Artwork, no idea. But I'm wondering if they might get Hugh Syme involved again. Is it Syme or Syme? But I know he's the classic guy. How long the songs will be? I think it's going to be. I honestly think it's going to be a typical Dream Theater record in terms of, you know, presentation. But I just think I think what's going to set it apart again is the energy and the sound. So.
You know, it's interesting because was it Kale that said something about this? Is Mike said this is his third act. He called it his third act. So would it be something thematically along the lines of, don't laugh at me, I say Circle of Life, but like the third act of your, you know, of your life in general, or like trying to think of what a better theme would be. You kind of see where I'm going here.
Yeah, I think lyrically they could do that. I mean, it could definitely be
like a time of sort of like, this is sort of like a more of a time of reflection and creativity at the same time.
Yeah, I think a good example there, at least one that I'm familiar with, is Queensryche's Promised Land record. You know, because Jeff Tate, you know, said that record was basically lyrically, a lot of it was written from the perspective of a bunch of guys, like they were hungry for the success. Operation Mindcrime blew them up, and then, you know, Empire put them over the top, and then they were just, you know, sold a couple million records. So they basically had everything they want, and then they realized they're middle-aged guys, like, where do you go from here? You know, it's the, what's the next step? What do we do?
Right.
And, you know, that very well could be. It could be a very, you know, as opposed to, and you know what, dude, like I was about to say, as opposed to like the more fantastical style that they've had on a lot of records. I think especially like if you notice like the lyrics on the last record, they were very much like, you know, we discussed in our deep dive, and what, like they're kind of like inspirational and, you know, reach for the mountaintop type of things. And it's more grounded in reality. They haven't really done that crazy, like, you know, systematic chaos, writing about monsters and vampire stuff, storytelling thing in quite a while. I mean, you had like Room 237 or something. You know, I mean, you have it here and there, but I would say the majority of the Mangini era, it was much more grounded in a real sense of actual things happening to people as opposed to fantasy stuff. So, I mean, I could totally see what you're saying being the case where, you know, it's kind of like, you know, they let's face it. I mean, however many records they have in them, I agree with the people in the chat that were saying they hope it's not just one record. I don't think that's going to, I mean, as much as we've heard that, I don't think that's going to be the case personally. I would be surprised at that unless for some reason this tanks and it's just, you know, the popularity is just not going to come back to where it was. But.
Well, if you're going to do an album and you're going to do a tour and then they're going to do a live album, that's puts you at damn near 4 years, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. It's just tough to say if they're for sure doing this live album, then, you know, it's going to be a minimum 5 years before they probably even start a second album.
I don't think it's going to be that long.
No.
I mean, their album cycles typically go about 2 years if you look at it, you know, because
I mean, they're going to want to milk this for I mean, they're going to want to milk this album for a minimum 2 years.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it's, well, I mean, the demand is going to be there. So, Kale says, Brian, the 40th is next year. God bless. Is it? I mean, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, it is. Holy crud. That is crazy. Was Score really 20 years ago? Jesus. Where does the time go? That does not feel like that record is 20 years old. That is crazy, man.
Yeah.
Do you think if they do another live record, if that's the case, do you think that they can book a place bigger than Radio City to do a show at to record? Like, because Radio City, I want to say, is like 6,000 or something around there. Do you think they could do something like 8 to 10?
Probably not in the States, no.
Yeah. All right, look. God damn it. Doug McCauley and Kale, it says Score. And Kale says, drink? No. Absolutely not. I did not say I was there. I mentioned the record. I did.
I was going to say, don't you have to say you were in the documentary or whatever?
Yeah, it's me saying that I was there or mentioning that I was there. Or, you know, so, but not just mentioning Score itself. That doesn't count. Kale says Madison Square Garden. I think that's too many, Kale.
I don't see that.
Although that would be pretty awesome. Kale, half a drink. Nice.
Yeah, that's one thing John's not capable of is half a drink.
You'd be surprised, man. I am not drinking, at least for January. Like I finally got so sick and tired of being a fat slob piece of shit that I'm like, all right, look, cut out the damn alcohol, try and get some physical activity and, you know, get back to eating healthy all the time instead of just part of the time. And
well, you can knock out the first two of those, but the third one, I don't know about.
Hey, I've been perfect so far. I know it's only, what, 11 days, but I've been perfect. So up your butt, Joe Boo.
You missed my whole joke. You said fat slob piece of shit.
Ah, well.
If I have to go back and explain it, it's nowhere near as hilarious as I know it wasn't anyway.
I was busy defending myself on other parts of what you ripped me for. Nice. Oh, my God. Ali Studio, any new eight string song on the new record?
Sure.
I mean, he's got it. Why not use it? I suppose. You know,
Jason Clues. I've seen. There's plenty of times I've seen Johnny have two half drinks in one sitting. I call that a full drink.
Look, man. Why am I catching shit? What did I do?
I don't know.
it went from Dream Theater to ripping on Metallica to now ripping on me.
This is what happens when you start a show and you really don't have a topic.
No, it's all good. So, all right. So, all right. Before we get out of here for tonight, so, I mean, overall, I think that this is going to be one of the very best years in Dream Theater history. I'm going on record as saying that. I think there's just a renewed excitement that you don't really get with your favorite band very often. So I think for that reason, it's going to be, you know, it's kind of like, you know, like I used the term earlier in the show, like putting on that old, familiar, comfortable pair of jeans. You know, it's, you know, to see Portnoy back and, you know, to kind of hear the songs played, you know, the way they used to, which is weird to say because Mangini played them beautifully. But, you know, to have the original guy back and to have that nostalgia trip for a while is going to be cool.
Well, hold on a second now. So are we totally missing something obvious? And if this is the 40th anniversary coming up, are they all behind the scenes working on some massive box set, Lost, Not Forgotten, ginormous special edition, whatever? This and that. They got to be coming up with something, no?
It's an interesting thought. I mean, is that stuff covered in the Lost Not Forgotten releases, though? I mean, do they have a lot of that in there? Or are they sitting on a lot of stuff that they're going to do for a 40th anniversary release?
But, I mean, just something where they'd say, look, we remastered every album. You can get it on disc or vinyl for, you know, I don't know, $6.95 or whatever the hell they're going to charge, you know, something like that.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a good point. I didn't think about the 40th anniversary, but I mean that's the one thing that I think Mike brings to the table that, you know, they couldn't really do without him. He's got such a sense of what the fans want, and he comes at, you know, the way he approaches things from the perspective of a fan. He's like, oh man, if I was into a band, this is what I would like to have. Yeah. Type of a thing. And I think having that back is going to be, you know, interesting to see what all they do. So I like Jay's idea. He says, speaking of Score, they should finally release that in Blu-ray. Yeah, I think they should take all their stuff that was only released on DVD and put it on Blu-ray. That would be a set that I would buy. Because I've got the two DVD set that's Live in Tokyo and Once in a Lifetime. That's pretty cool. But yeah, make a box set of all of the releases and make everything on Blu-ray. Remaster all that with upgraded audio and video. And, you know, Doug McCauley, is Blu-ray still a thing? Yes. Yes, it is, Doug. I myself actually collect 3D Blu-rays. So, but that's because I can watch them in my PlayStation VR headset. And it's awesome. Watching concerts in that format is kick ass, by the way. That is especially Sons of Apollo. That live album they put out, watching that in the VR headset is unbelievable. So, yeah, that's a good point, man. I mean, Mike doesn't miss a chance to really blow up an anniversary. So, I think that's a really, really.
I mean, I guess it kind of really shows how calculated this could have been, too. You know.
Yeah,
the like 40 years is coming up. You know.
Yeah. Maybe like do the album, do a regular tour, then do like a 40th anniversary tour, and that's where they'll record the live record.
Wouldn't it be funny if they were like, if he was like, we should do it. He's like, no, and the rest of them are like, no, let's wait till the 50th. Wait till the 50th. It's like, dude, that's 10 more years.
<You know>? Right.
Some of you guys might be dead by then.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be great if we're making all these predictions and like a whole bunch of them actually come true? Like we're sitting here like a year, year and a half from now, we're looking back at this going, what the hell? We guessed everything.
Right. Or nothing. Like the new album. Yeah. Sitting here a year from now. Well, the new album's coming out in August of 25. Oh, great.
or the new record is just Dream Theater does jazz standards.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's nothing but a jazz cover record.
Nice.
So, well, cool, man. Well, this was fun. We're definitely in for a lot of news this year and some new Dream Theater music, which is always good to look forward to. I just hope they keep us posted on things along the way. I mean, I hope there's not radio silence and then all of a sudden it's like, hey, the record's done. You know, it'd be cool to get updates and, you know, get some pictures on social media and maybe even some little clips of them recording stuff. And, you know, I think that'd be cool. I'd like to kind of be a fly on the wall like we talked about earlier. So I think it'll be fun. So, all right. Well, thank you guys for tuning into another episode of Talking Into Infinity. Brian, this has been fun. Obviously, we will get together. We've got a ton of great stuff coming up for you guys. We got a bunch of stuff that we have talked about doing that we are going to be putting into motion. Of course, we're going to be trying to get whatever interviews we can get. Oh, God, I can't believe I might actually have to set up a goddamn episode about Saint Anger because that means I have to actually listen to that goddamn album. Oh, my God.
We
got to
do it.
That is seriously, man. Like, if I, God bless America. If I got to listen to that record, that's not going to be pretty. But I'll hit up Aiken and see if he'll do it. That means you're stuck, Kale. None of this, I got to go to work crap. If I have to listen to Saint Anger and take notes on it, holy God, you are not going to work. You're going to take a PTO day for putting me through that suffering. Jesus. Anyway, so yeah, we got some cool stuff coming up. We got some good show ideas in the pipeline. I actually already have the date of the fan hangout in my phone for December. I planned that far ahead.
Good Lord.
Yep. And I think I have an idea for my birthday show. Since we get to pick topics and stuff like that, we have.
When's that again? October?
No, next month, February.
Oh crap! What, I think it's October.
Yeah. So it would be on February 22nd, because my birthday is Monday the 26th, so it would be February 22nd would be my birthday show. So a few shows from now, I was thinking it might be kind of a good time to get Steven Rosen back on. He can talk about the third edition of Tone Chaser. He had to do a third reprint because the second one completely sold out. So he's doing another reprint, but he did say he would come on and deep dive Fair Warning with us. So maybe for my birthday, we'll talk some Van Halen, cause that's what I like to do. So, yeah. You know, I think that's becoming a yearly thing. Me talking about Van Halen on my birthday. So that'll be cool. That'll be cool. So yeah, guys, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Talking Into Infinity, a Dream Theater centric podcast. If you are watching on YouTube, please click the like button, click the subscribe button, and smash the notification bell. We will be right back here on Thursday, January 25th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at all of our normal locations. And appreciate all you guys in the chat. Jason Clues, Kale McLeish, Chastity, Ali, good to see you. JG3, Doug McCauley, Joe Gebhardt, thank all you guys for tuning in. It was awesome to see you. Chastity is asking real quick for the fan hangout date. That would be Friday, December 20th. So that will be the date of the fan hangout.
It's only got 11 and a half months to prepare.
Yeah, 11 months and 9 days from now. So mark your calendars, y'all. Come up with your topics. But yeah, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Talking Into Infinity, guys. We will be back here on January 25th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Brian, it's been cool. Hopefully you get a second interview, an official in-person interview where I work, and it goes well if you enjoy the job. And maybe we'll be coworkers again. If so, don't come find me. So, till next time, guys, I'm your host, John. He is Brian, or Brain, if he, you know, still can't figure out the spelling. And as always, guys, see you next time, and carpe diem. Hey, everyone. Thanks for checking out Talking Into Infinity, a Dream Theater podcast. Just wanted to remind you that we want you to be a part of the show. If you give us a like on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at TIIDT Podcast, we post the schedule of when we are recording the show live. It is a streaming video platform on our Facebook and YouTube pages, and it has a live chat feature where you can comment on the show, ask questions, and we can bring your remarks up on the screen and have you drive the conversation. So again, give us a like on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at TIIDT Podcast, and come hang out with us and be a part of the show. Thanks again, and carpe diem.